I was only back in LA for 4 days and I'm already back on the road. Barely time to do laundry, let alone make a baby. On the podcast this week, the second part of my interview with those wonderful folks, Jace and Dedeker, from the Multi Amory podcast, and thoughts, yes, more thoughts, about making the decision to become a parent, or at least a decision to start trying. It's my unconventional life. Back home.
I went to the woods because I wanted to live deliberately, to front only the essential facts of life, and see if I could not learn what it had to teach, and not when I came to die, discover that I had not lived. My name is Nigel McGuinness, and this is My Unconventional Life. It's a podcast, it's a journal, and in a way it is kind of a personal ad. But most of all, it's about navigating the treacherous waters of love, sex, and relationships in 2017. Sponsored by absolutely no one. Every week, I detail my own journey and discuss my own untraditional views and aspirations in that world. Whatever the topic, whoever the guest, it all comes back to one question. How do we best find and express love in 2017? Sands through the hourglass, so are the days of our lives. My old landlady and friend Carol always used to watch that show. After moving out, we always kept in touch, right until she passed away a couple of years ago. I'd always ask her for advice about big life decisions, especially when it came to love and dating. I wonder what she'd tell me now. I think she'd tell me to go with my heart. Don't overthink things. You never know what's going to happen. Either way, time is certainly ticking on. Days into weeks, weeks into months. I'm not getting any younger. And fortune favours the bold. This is the sentiment that seems to be flowing beneath the river of my mind right now. Beneath the top waters of indecision and doubt. It felt good to be back in LA. I guess I feel very comfortable there. Riding my bike to the gym, hanging out with friends, sitting in the sun at my favourite coffee shop. It seems like I've put down roots. So of course, this puts the idea of having a kid more firmly in my head. The question right now then is, I guess, whether Eri is the right person. I've been spending as much time as possible with her, which given my schedule isn't an inordinate amount, but it's most of my time when I am home. So that should give me a better insight. We've talked more about being parents, pretty much finalised a 4-page contract and agreement, and we've talked more about our life histories too. I always find that learning about someone's intimate past makes them more attractive to me. Certainly seems to be a burgeoning rapport between us two. I just need to make sure it's genuine, not fueled solely by the desire to be a parent and not go back to square one looking for another partner and upset this one. I think you can think about things too much though. Most people who have kids don't put half as much thought into it as we are, and often they're fueled solely by oxytocin and romantic idealism. But this isn't about most people, is it? It's about me, and a decision for the rest of my life. At the same time, I feel if you find someone who'd be a good parent, who you can communicate honestly and openly with, you kind of figure out a lot of the rest as you go along. I got to see that side of things when I was in Perth last week with my best friend and his family. The wonder and magic of parenthood, and the partnership between him and his wife. Does it matter that they've had sex, or that they continue to do so? I mean, in terms of being good parents? I don't think so. As long as there's a rapport and affection between them, and more so an ability to communicate and compromise, kids just need to feel loved and safe. George the baby's nappy rash cleared up before I left, but he still cried a lot, and then immediately stopped, like he hadn't had a care in the world. I guess I've seen that you've just got to accept that's part of being a parent. Young kids are kind of flippant sometimes, but I guess they are being truly present. So maybe there's something we can learn from them too. Eri's got her sights set on May to start trying to get pregnant. And on paper that seems a little soon. And I'm pretty risk averse. But I just think,
What will I know in 3 months or 6 months or a year that I don't know now? I mean, will I ever feel 100% sure? And has being sexually intimate shortened the time needed or lengthened it? I'm not sure I'm going to have the answers to these questions. It just feels positive. And perhaps you shouldn't look at decisions as either being right or wrong. Perhaps you should also focus on being in the right place to adapt after decisions have been made. Either way, if we are going to try to get pregnant soon, we should probably get some practice in. I should be home more in April, but by the end of the month and into June, I could be away a fair bit too. This is the new normal, I guess, and I guess I just need to accept it, even if it means dating is going to be somewhat problematic. On that note, I had a date Saturday night, and I'm not going to lie, I really like her. I mean, it was uncanny. I can't believe how many parallels we shared and how comfortable we seemed to be around each other. It seems like Eri, Rachel, and so many of the other people I've met, like somehow they were put into my life for a reason. I mean, my mouth dropped open when she told me she's a co-parent to an 18-month-year-old, although not in the same mold as I'm planning. But she says it's worked out amazingly well. She says it's like the most amazing experience she's ever had. So that gave me encouragement about Eri. And then the more we talked and hung out, the more attracted I was to her. I don't know how else to explain it. I just felt really attracted to her, mentally as well as physically. I get it, it's just one date, but I've been on plenty of other dates that never came close to feeling this way. Either way, I definitely need to just chill the fuck out and relax and let things progress organically. It's a little unsettling though, I guess, when you feel something so soon and feel like you need to pump the brakes. I'm overthinking it, I know. It's cool. It's funny because before we met up, I was feeling totally nonplussed with dating in LA. I've tried meeting up with a few other girls that seemingly are interested in dating over the last few months, but have been almost totally unable to figure out schedules. And I was starting to think that, is my life really that miserable if I'm not dating anyone? Now, this might have just been a story I was telling myself to avoid the hard work needed to be more successful at dating. I read about this, along with a plethora of other great information, in blogger Mark Manson's book Models. It's kind of a dating advice book, but comes at it from a more well-rounded standpoint than a lot of the other game-oriented stuff on the market. I've only read the first half so far, but it has really made it clear why I've had the issues that I've had in the past. And if Freudian theory is right, knowing what has caused a problem is the first step to solving it, right? While I was in LA, I had a friend visit from Chicago who told me how his friend loves the podcast and how it has influenced her to not feel quite so ostracized about her views on dating and relationships. And that was nice. It's nice to know that you're doing something that has value, even just one person. The interview this week then is the second part of my interview with Jace and Dedica from the Multiamory podcast. They do very well dating wise, so I should certainly pay attention to what they say. And as you'll hear, it's exactly what we get into this week.
Right. And I mean, that's part of our whole cultural psyche is this thing. The thing that caused me to go into like major depression and self-hatred when I was younger is that fairy tale that once you find the one, then you just like will not want anyone else.
Right.
And on a biological level, it's just not true.
Right.
Yeah. Right. 100%. So you're saying it's certainly easier to date with people who are already on the same page as you, right?
Yeah. Certainly
it's easier. For sure.
For me, I'm finding that most of the girls who I meet who aren't in the poly lifestyle are single for the most part. And therefore I feel like, okay, that's an opening to talk to them and get to know them. Mm-hmm. And when I meet girls in the poly lifestyle, they've usually got 2 or 3 boyfriends. And I go, no matter how much I say, yes, but they're poly, I just go, I can't talk to them. I can't flirt with them. I can't, because that's disrespectful to...
Well, that's interesting.
No, it's I get that. I actually totally understand that. Mm-hmm. I will sometimes have a similar feeling if I'm at a poly event and see a girl I'm interested in, but know she's there with her boyfriend.
Right.
And the trick is... trying to kind of tease out how much of this is me culturally being like, that's a terrible thing to do because she has a boyfriend. She couldn't possibly be interested because she has a boyfriend.
Yeah.
And then how much of it is an actual realistic, relevant desire to be respectful while she's with him at this event.
Right.
Because maybe they both came out here and they don't know a lot of people. They might be nervous. And so by flirting with her and getting her attention, like, maybe that's not being as kind to their day together. You don't know if they're there to look for new partners or not.
So start chatting and get a sense of where they are.
Try talking to both of them.
Yeah, talk to both of them. Just as friends, like, just make friends with people. Yeah. You know?
No, but then I feel as though right now I'm in a friend zone. I'm in the friend zone, and the second this goes from being, he just came to talk to us. He's a nice guy. He's a friendly guy. And the second that it comes from being taught that sex is wrong, the second that this takes on any kind of sexual context, I'm like, I'm that weird, creepy British guy who's just like, he's only ever talking to us because ultimately, he wants to fucking...
Right. Mm-hmm. Something that I have... Because I totally understand all that kind of baggage that comes along with it. It's like, you don't want to seem predatory. You don't want to seem creepy. All that is to go into an event with this very clear intention of, I want to talk to and start conversations and make friends with people that I'm not attracted to as well as people that I am.
Okay.
Because then it's kind of clearer, like, I want to get to know all these different people, whether it's because they're not a gender that you're attracted to or you're just not attracted to them.
Yeah.
But to have conversations with them, get to know who they are, because the more you're part of that community, even if it's just a community at this one event, right? Maybe it's not an ongoing community.
Right.
The more you become safer in that and you get more cues to understand who might be receptive to flirting.
It becomes clear that you're really not there just to be a predator, to try to find someone to pick up on.
Right.
And I found when I go in with that mindset that not only do I have better luck actually having women interested in me, but I also end up making a lot of really good friends.
Right.
Who are then great, great resources and people that maybe I'll see them at another event. And it's like, oh, hey, Jonathan, good to see you again, whatever it is. It's just overall made all facets of the event more positive for me. Because I do worry about that. Like, I don't want to be predatory. I don't want to be creepy.
Well, especially with your position as well, in the sense that oftentimes you come to these events as someone with experience and someone with, who's respected, and you don't want to be that using that to your advantage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, for sure. Within poly, I've heard a lot about boundaries and consent.
Mm-hmm.
And so you go and you talk to everybody, whether you're attracted to them or not, but some of them you are attracted to.
Mm-hmm.
And within a normal heteronormative sort of lifestyle, you just flirt a little bit. There'll be a little bit of Kino escalation. Da, 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 da. And then all of a sudden, the conversation will pause, you drop the shoulder and you go for it, right? But I don't feel now, I feel almost as though there's more discussion involved in polyamory to where before you'd even get there, you'd say, I'm attracted to you physically. Do you feel the same way? If you do, who are you dating? What are your boundaries? What's your status? And we have all this sort of conversation, which is somewhat a little inorganic.
Mm-hmm.
I think it can be if you say it like that.
Yeah, if you say it like that, sure. I mean, we didn't start our relationship that way.
How did it start?
Oh, man.
I'll do like the simplified version of it. Yeah, but basically on OkCupid is how we actually connected through other partners of ours who started dating.
Mm-hmm.
But I had already like seen her profile and had been planning to message her on OkCupid.
Gotcha. And you both were poly on there. It was written poly on there.
Yeah, right. But my partner started dating his partner.
Oh.
Like went on a first date with his partner.
Yeah, yeah.
And they were both like, you two would probably like each other.
Yeah.
So then we actually, Dedeker was the one who wrote the first message there being like, hey, so they told me I should message you.
Yeah.
So it was already on the table.
Yeah, it was already on the table.
It was never like, do they like me, do not like. It's
it was already on the table.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I guess what I was getting at though is that something I found is you kind of just learn through doing it ways that are a little more organic or a little more fun to bring those things up in conversation.
Yeah.
Right.
And also if you are just chatting with everyone and being friendly, you'd probably already know a little bit about who they're dating.
Yeah.
And they might know about who you're dating.
Especially if it's at an event, you'll probably meet who it is that they're dating, quite possibly.
They might be there, right? So you kind of get that not in the like, okay, let's sit down and fill out this bulleted list of all the questions we need, right? that instead it just, that kind of comes up through conversation. And check in like before you're actually having sex to like be sure you're all on the same page about mm-hmm. things.
Right.
But by that point, hopefully that rapport is there, that it's yeah. not this like screeching halt to have this conversation.
Yeah. Right.
And I can understand how... At first, it may seem inorganic because when you are a newbie and first communicating about these things, like we never get a social model about how to have these conversations. Right. So it can be like, can you tell me what your STI status is? can you tell me what your relationship status is?
Right.
You know, like when we're first trying that out, it does feel weird because we're not taught to talk about these things. But like with time and experience, and honestly, especially if you're going to poly events and meeting people who have already been in the community for a while.
Right.
These are people who are used to talking about these things.
Right.
And so it may be a little bit easier on that side.
And I think there's value in having a partner as well, right? Because I think if you're speaking from a position of, what's the opposite of scarcity? Plenty.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right, yeah.
Then you don't come off as desperate and or weird and
Well, there
or
is
creepy.
That whole thing that, you know, there's the old cliche that as soon as you're in a committed relationship, that's when everybody starts banging down your door.
Right.
You know.
Because you're not coming from a place of need.
Yeah.
See, that never worked for me. When I was married, I was even less appealing, I guess, because I was purposely trying to not flirt, to make it obvious they were married.
There's that too.
Yeah. But within poly, when you've got a partner, then it's...
It does help. I mean, it doesn't mean that rejection necessarily sucks any less. You know, rejection can still be scary, and it can still be scary to approach someone and to try to flirt with someone. But of course, it is nice if... You know, you do have two or three partners who are like helping to stoke your ego a little bit, where you know you have solid relationships, you're getting your needs
confidence.
Met. Mm-hmm. Yes, you get some confidence that does help.
But I think the other thing, again, with this approach of kind of coming in with the intention of making friends before dating, is that it also helped me to be like, I'm going to an event, and if all I came away from at the end was I had some good conversations with people and maybe made some friends, then I can say like check mark succeeded at that event.
Right.
Whereas if you go in with the intention of finding someone to date or to hook up with or something, you have a lot less control over whether at the end of the night you can check that box and be like, yep, accomplished that.
Right.
Yeah.
So it helps to go in and not have that sense of neediness, whether you have a partner or not.
Right. But if you've got a partner, it's obviously easier to...
Can be a little easier.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Although sometimes people have a partner and maybe your partner's dating three other guys and it makes you feel more desperate to be like, shit, I've got to compete with her.
I've got to keep up.
Yeah.
Right?
Like sometimes. It's all psychology. It's all figuring out how to frame it for yourself.
I guess
so. It's not desperate. It's not needy. It's not clingy.
Right. Yeah. I just think it would be nice to have... Do you think there's... I asked Ryan. Are you familiar with Ryan?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I asked him whether there was like a sufficient amount of partners to where he go, you know what? I'm happy at 9 and I don't want any more. That's too many.
That's a case by case basis.
Is it?
You know, for me, I think having done this for a number of years now it's much more clear to me what my emotional bandwidth is, what my time capacity is. And those things do fluctuate and change depending on what's going on in my life. But for instance, like my capacity for dating was much broader when I wasn't writing a book versus when I was writing a book.
Mm-hmm.
That suddenly that spectrum got a lot shorter, and then it was kind of like, okay, like I'm at my quota as far as my time and energy goes, and including trying to budget time for myself as well. And so that just takes some self-awareness to know, like, okay, realistically, what do I have to give? What can I maintain? Is it that I can maintain maybe two very emotionally intense relationships, and then if I bring on another person, it may have to be a little more casual? And if you know that and can communicate that, that's fine.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, it's like getting clear on it, and as it changes, like Jedeker was saying, being able to communicate that to your partners.
Mm-hmm.
Like maybe you have someone who you're dating and you're seeing each other a couple times a week. It's, you know, fairly serious.
Right.
And then something changes in your life with your job, even. Maybe it's not because another partner came along, of just saying, hey, you know, this is going to change for me for a while. Would it be okay with you if we continued our relationship, but seeing each other only once a month, or, you know, whatever it would be for you.
Right.
And there's a real chance that they won't be okay with that, right? Every relationship's a negotiation. You know, it's both of you have to be getting what you want.
Right.
But it can change over time. So in terms of the number, it's also hard to say, even if your life's not changing so much. But like Dedeker said, maybe just two really serious relationships might be all you can handle.
Yeah.
Or it might be, I have five
right.
more casual, kind of more friend-esque mm-hmm. relationships.
That you only see each other maybe a couple times a year or something like that.
Right.
Or even that. Then it's like, oh, I have 10 partners, but I really only see two of them regularly or right. whatever. Right. Yeah. There's so many possibilities. This is it.
Like, I interviewed one of my friends who said, you're not polyamorous at all. Well, how many people are you sleeping with? You know what I mean? Like, if you're not sleeping with more than one person, then you're not polyamorous, which is absurd.
Are you not gay? Are you not gay unless you right. are you know, in bed with another man?
If I don't have a cock in my times, mouth, I'm not gay. Yeah. Right.
Exactly.
So that's a bit.
Well,
nuts.
That's also like with bisexual. Like, if right. you're bisexual and married to one person, are you not bisexual anymore just because you happen to be married
for
to
sure.
one
for
gender
sure.
and not the other?
And like, I could, you know, to my point, I could just be only seeing one person.
Mm-hmm.
But open to seeing other people yeah. and still be perfectly happy at yeah. that, right?
Something we like to clarify too is that polyamory is almost less about what you want to do and more about what you're okay with your partners doing.
Hmm.
Yeah, because it's very easy to connect to a desire to have multiple partners.
Yeah.
On a very basic human primal level of like, mm-hmm. sure, having more sex, having more love, like that sounds great. But what really distinguishes it is your feelings and instincts towards allowing your partners to kind of have the same freedom.
Right.
That's more where the polyamorous mm-hmm. identity lies, so, I think.
Yeah, know? I get that. I get that 100%. So let me ask you, why multi-amory, not polyamory? I'm sure you've got this question, so give me the Reader's Digest conversion.
Go ahead.
Yeah, so basically there's this joke that someone ends up posting on my Facebook wall once or twice a year, because it kind of makes the rounds. But mm-hmm. it's this joke, and it takes different forms, but uh-huh. it's basically someone mentioning the word polyamory and another person being like, oh, polyamory, that's wrong. And the first person getting really offended, like, what are you talking about? It's a totally justifiable, you know, ethical way of doing things. And they're like, sure, but mixing a Latin root and a Greek root into one word, like, that's wrong. It should either be multi-amory or polyphilia.
Gotcha.
Or in some versions of the joke, polyheresy
yeah.
is the other one. Uh-huh. That's it. It's just kind of the joke.
You just wanted
and so
to be
we,
grammatically correct.
Well, I mean, not even really wanting to be grammatically correct. We just wanted a catchy name,
yeah,
you
yeah.
know, gotcha, that conveyed right. our meaning.
But it is interesting. So I was talking to someone the other day about how, as people in the polyamory community, we talk about the ability to love lots of people. And this is what we always say, I can love more than one person at the same time. Hence polyamory or multi-amory mm-hmm. or whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think that's really the issue, because I think anybody you talk to accepts that you can love more than one person at the same time. What they can't accept is that you can love more than one person that you're having sex with. So
yeah.
it really is.
That's
the difference. That's the distinction. So maybe we need a new word.
Well, Paz, we have toyed with the idea of making multi-amory into like
some
definition,
new thing that
yeah.
means that or something. But
yeah,
we feel like at the end of the day, it's kind of less about finding a word that perfectly fits every single nuance of the way you do things,
yeah.
but it's more about this word starts a conversation, and then mm-hmm. from there you can clarify what that means to you.
Yeah.
But it is true that, and I actually use the example of family or best friends a lot when explaining polyamory to, you know, coworkers or random people that I meet who are curious about it.
Right.
I use the analogy of being able to love multiple children or love multiple siblings
right.
or right things like or multiple
sure.
best friends.
Which they all understand until you mm-hmm. say, yeah, but you're not fucking your kids, you're not fucking your best friends. So again, it comes back to this notion of human
well, kind of, but at the same time, a traditional problem that comes up is like if you have maybe people who are married, but if one of those people gets too close to someone of the opposite sex, like there's this term emotional infidelity
right.
that's been floated around. And so like yeah. there doesn't have to be sex involved for someone to feel threatened or to feel like this isn't an appropriate relationship, at least from the traditional monogamous viewpoint.
And I would say that the distinction really is not about whether or not you're having sex with that person, but about whether or not we classify that romance as love.
Yeah.
For example, there's a lot of married couples who don't have sex anymore.
But I don't know if you know this.
But that same principle would still apply, and I wouldn't say it's because of whether or not they're having sex, but because they've decided that that love is romantic love.
Yeah.
And I think that's the distinction we make when... And so when I try to make that analogy of looking
yeah.
at family or friends, I would argue that the sex and the romantic love are technically two separate things.
Right.
And that you can have one without the other, or you can have both.
Yeah.
But that when we think that all of those things have to go together, that you can only love someone if you're having sex with them.
Right.
That's can be problematic in a lot of relationships. And then also that you could only have sex with someone if you love them, you know, has to do with a lot of our kind of repressive sex negative culture.
Right.
As well.
Which is where I've spent a lot of time there as well.
Yeah,
I always
of course.
Felt like you only had long-term monogamous mm-hmm. meaningful sex, or you had casual meaningless sex,
yes.
and there was nothing in
there's
between.
Nothing in between.
And I struggled with that for the longest time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, and I said, why can't you have meaningful sex that isn't exclusive? And mm-hmm. everyone said, because you're crazy and you'll never find somebody else who feels the same way.
Yeah.
And now I'm meeting people.
No, that's, I mean, and that's so interesting that you bring that up, because the sense of isolation can kill you. It can be brutal. I mean, that was obviously my whole young adult life. It was that. It was like, I feel like I'm the only person on the planet who feels this way.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people share that experience.
Right.
And that was part of what inspired us to create the podcast, what inspired me to write the book was mm-hmm. I remembered those moments when I first connected to the community, and not even an actual tangible community, but like an online community.
Right.
And just through reading books, I remember that first moment of like, oh my God, I'm not alone.
Yeah, I'm not a
freak. I'm not a freak. And that was, I mean, that's part of the reason why we create content, is to let people know, like, you aren't alone in
this.
And mm-hmm. this isn't a weird, freaky, messed up, horrible, pathological thing.
Right. Right.
You know, this is normal.
It's a positive, healthy way of relating to other people. Yeah. I remember I went to SPLA for the orientation and met all these wonderful, open-minded, intelligent people.
Yeah.
And I remember telling my friend afterwards, I was like, it would be as if I was gay my whole life, and then walking into a room full of guys going, oh, other people like sucking dick as well.
Exactly.
Wow, I had no idea.
Yeah.
For a lot of people, it is that kind of,
it's
like,
the
oh
coming,
my God.
The coming home movement,
found,
kind of.
Yeah.
Whereas for other people, it's not something that they felt so much that draw to, but as they've thought about it, it kind of makes more logical sense, and then their emotions start catching up after the fact. Mm-hmm. I think that it can happen a lot of different ways, that people can end up being drawn to some form of non-monogamy.
Yeah.
And I think that really, you know, the modern day polyamory movement was really fueled by the internet, because it allowed people to find community when they couldn't before.
Right.
You know, I think without the internet, like, I don't know if I would have, you know, I probably would have gone my entire life just thinking like, well, this is a weird, freaky thing, and I'll just keep trying to be monogamous.
It's much easier to meet people, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
Right, for sure.
And not even just dating partners, but just other people, you know, other people who are like-minded.
Mm-hmm. Right.
To have other people to talk to about it.
Yes.
To say, sure, it's all well and good, say, if I accepted that I have, you know, I fall in love with multiple people, or I'm attracted to multiple people, but then by having a community, you have people you can talk to about, well, how do I do this ethically?
Yeah,
you can have some like
how
some guideposts for that.
Yeah, so other people to bounce those ideas off of who aren't immediately being, well, just don't do it. That's how you can.
Well, you're crazy.
Right,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So you've been doing the podcast for 2.5 years. Mm-hmm. I mean, how many years of being actively non-monogamous would you say?
Mm-hmm. I've been actively non-monogamous for about 7 years.
Seven?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. For me, I would say it's about 4.5-ish.
Right. Okay. And so you're obviously quite immersed in this now with the podcast and everything else. So perhaps you don't have as clear a viewpoint on the world in general. Mm-hmm. But do you feel as though we're close to a sort of cultural epoch that's changing, and that this could become mainstream? Who was it? There was a famous person. Was it Rihanna or someone came out recently as being non-monogamous?
Monique.
Was
Monique
it?
Is non-monogamous.
There was another actress recently who came out.
Scarlett Johansson.
Scarlett Johansson. She didn't quite come out as non-monogamous.
Yeah.
She was just quoted as saying that she thinks that like monogamy is difficult and unnatural, but she didn't quite come out as non-monogamous.
Gotcha. But do you feel as though we are close to a time where it will be accepted, or do you think it's going to be another 50 years? Because my friends just say, you know, everything you say, it makes sense and all good, but I think you're just going to have to wait, you know, a generation before it becomes mainstream.
I mean, I do think that that with millennials specifically, they've probably been the first generation in quite a long time that are the most open to questioning relationships and questioning the status quo when it comes to relationships and sex. Mm-hmm. That doesn't necessarily mean that all millennials are totally gung-ho about this, or that it's even enough millennials to cause like a huge like stream to make it, you know, a huge change to make it mainstream.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough because I think that I do think that not too long from now, we're going to see more acceptance of it.
Yeah.
It might be 10, 20 years, but I do think it's, you know, it'll gradually happen, but I do think we'll start to see that. Whether it becomes mainstream and everyone's doing it, that's another question.
Right. Because yeah, it is a big leap to go from only 5% of the population to what would the mainstream 50, would have to be like over 50%. Yeah. You know, that is a big leap.
I would say the same for like, I think people now are much more accepting of the idea that sexuality is fluid in terms of not everyone's totally straight or totally gay, right? And this is something that took a while for people to accept, but that doesn't mean everyone's doing it.
Well, exactly. Yeah. In the same sense of, yeah, you know, yeah. Was it
being accepting and becoming mainstream kind of two different things.
Right. Yeah. It just would be nice if it wasn't such a, you know, big sort of awkward thing.
Yes, yes, of course.
To talk about, you know.
And that's part of why we do our podcast.
Right.
Is the more people who can be out there, you know, for us, it's like publicly with our real names, being like, hey, this isn't something that you need to be hide of. Or be ashamed of.
Right.
And it's taking some time. And there are some celebrities like Monique and some others. I'm totally
Shirley MacLaine was open. She was in open marriage for like 25 years.
Oh, I love Shirley MacLaine.
Yeah. Yeah.
So there's some people doing it. And I think that as we see more of that, it'll start to just become this like, okay, I don't have to be scared of this thing that's this other.
Yeah.
You know, as we start seeing more characters in our TV shows and our movies as well, which is starting to already change. We're starting to see reasonable depictions of non-monogamy or polyamory in healthy relationships on TV and in movies now.
Right.
So I think that's going to start changing our opinions the same way that like Will and Grace changed the way that you know, my parents saw gay people, because all of a sudden they had someone that humanized it and made it so they could relate to it.
Exactly.
That's interesting, isn't it? Yeah. So a lot of the people I've met in the poly community are also in the BDSM and kink world as well, or they've oftentimes, when they've opened up relationships, they've gone the route of swinging first and then gone into that. Mm-hmm. Whereas I've never come close to any of that. Do you think there's value in trying every glove and see which one fits or not?
I mean, there's a lot of overlap of those communities for sure, but I think that a common misconception is that, you know, if you're polyamorous, that means you definitely by default are into all of those things, that you're into BDSM or playing in public or exhibitionism or group sex. And that's not necessarily the case. Like, there's polyamorous people who want straight down the middle of the road vanilla sex.
Yeah.
And that's fine.
Or people who are polyamorous who are asexual.
Yeah.
Who want to have multiple romantic relationships but don't want to have sex with anybody ever.
Right.
That it's there for everybody. Anyone can do it. And that's another thing, like on our podcast, if you've listened to it, you'll notice that we very rarely talk much about sex.
Or kink.
And almost never talk about kink or BDSM. Huh. We talk about maybe some of the logistics of sex, like safe sex and communicating about sex.
Right.
But we did want to make it clear that polyamory has to do with your relationships and the kind of sex you do. You could be kinky and monogamous, or kinky and polyamorous, or kinky and gay, or kinky and straight. That there's two separate things. And I just want people to understand that just because those communities have a lot of overlap doesn't mean you have to.
Yeah, that you have to.
Right.
I mean, if you're curious, like, go ahead.
Go for it. Yeah.
We won't stop you.
Right. I'll be out in the hot tub in a second. Well, I think you guys are doing great work, you know. I think you really are. And you're obviously very much in love, and that's wonderful to see. So thank you.
Well, thank you.
I heard so many people this weekend, you know, say the same thing, you know, you're doing great work and stuff like that. So keep up the good work.
Well, thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you.
I don't have that many listeners, but if you want to push, tell us about your book.
Certainly. Yeah. Yeah. So I just published my very first book called The Smart Girl's Guide to Polyamory. So specifically, it's a guidebook to polyamory and open relationships and any kind of non-traditional love. You know, aimed for, you know, the female experience. However, a lot of men have been reading it and have found it quite accessible. And, you know, so I would recommend it for, you know, even if you are male and if you have female partners, especially.
I actually think very little of the book is something that's just specific to women.
Yeah.
I think it's kind of made to be you know, approachable and like understanding of the female experience. Mm-hmm. But as a guy, it wasn't like I was reading sections being like, ugh, I can barely relate to this. Or right. There's almost none of that.
Great.
So I definitely recommend it to anybody.
Okay. And obviously they can find that.
They can find that on Amazon. They can find it. They can waltz into their local Barnes & Noble and pick up a physical copy, or they can go to smartgirlsguidetopolyamory.com to find a direct link.
Or support your local bookstore and ask them to order it for you.
Right.
Good too.
Yeah.
Right,
yeah.
Like Skylight Books in Los Feliz. Do you guys have there?
Nice. Yeah.
Love that place.
Yeah. And then also our website is multiamory.com, like you said. And we have links to Dedeker's book and to our other content, like our blog and some videos and kind of a beginner's guide to polyamory. Lots of resources there too.
Right. And you guys are on a tour at the moment?
Yes. We're kind of starting to wrap up our very first West Coast recording tour.
Wow.
It was so much fun. Oh my God. Right. And we had sold out shows at like every single venue, which totally exceeded our expectations.
Yeah. And getting to do our same show, but with a live audience and getting some feedback and hearing their reactions as we did it.
So much fun.
It's been amazing. And then getting to hang out with people afterward.
Yeah, like getting to meet actually the people who are our listeners and our super fans.
It's been so cool.
It's been great. Yeah.
It is wonderful, isn't it? You know, I knew from being a wrestler and having people come up to me and say, there was a guy in England and his mum was never much of a wrestling fan. He was a big wrestling fan. And then one day she came down while he was watching and saw me on the TV and was like, who's this guy? And so they just sort of bonded
over
me and this wrestling show.
That's great.
And unfortunately she had like a stroke and she had to be put in a home, and so I had trouble communicating, but the only way they could really communicate was talking about wrestling and talking about how they used to watch it together. And when he told me that and I got to meet her, it's like that ability.
Yeah, that's so cool.
You know
cool.
what I mean?
Yeah.
It's fantastic, and it's a real blessing, you know, and I know you guys appreciate it. So
it's funny because actually that came up recently because we were talking about the children thing actually not too long ago, about our checking in on our feelings on having kids and things like that. Mm-hmm. I forget how we came to it, but we talked about this idea of like, yes, we really like the idea of being able to take part in the child rearing process and like bring up this person who's going to contribute good things to the world and kind of fill them with our ideas and our philosophy. Mm-hmm. But then realizing like, but we're kind of doing that, but with fully formed adults that we don't have to feed or change.
You're right.
And we get to influence these people's lives in that way. And that's also quite rewarding.
It is, isn't it? Yeah. Be someone to the world or the world to someone.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a fantastic way of looking at it. So. All right, guys. Well, listen, thank you for your time and thank you for everything this weekend. It's been wonderful meeting you. And, you know, I'm going to start listening to the podcast every week now. And so good luck to you. And hopefully I'll run into you again somewhere down the road.
Yeah, definitely. Likewise.
You
too.
Take care, guys. Be safe. That was Jason Dedeker. Make sure you do check out the podcast and their website, multiamory.com, and Dedeker's wonderful book. Add them to the list of kind, intelligent, and genuine people I've met in the poly community in my quest to find what sort of relationships work for me. Speaking of which, next week's interview is with one of my dearest friends in LA, Kat. We met originally through wrestling, but our friendship has really developed largely outside of it. She has largely the same views and desires as me in terms of non-monogamy, although having a vagina means she gets different results expressing them.
If they break up with you, then it's, oh, you're throwing the relationship away, or you're dumping me, or you're doing something bad, you know. Or even if you are in a relationship and you fall in love with somebody new and you're caught in that situation, how do I handle this because I have feelings for two people? You can't even talk about it because you're already the bad guy for feeling that way.
Yeah.
Whereas you shouldn't have to feel guilty for feeling love for anybody.
Mm.
It's like one of them, you know, sticky fly traps that you kind of, you get stuck to it and you're like, oh, this feels good, you know. And after a while, when you see another fly over there that you really like, you're like, oh, man, I got trapped somehow. I didn't mean to.
I'll see you next week. Well, that is it. Another week on this earth, another blessing. Thank you for listening and being part of my journey. Drop me a line if you have a comment or question, or if you think you know someone who'd be a good parenting partner for me. If you like the show, help spread the word, write a review, subscribe on iTunes or Stitcher so you don't miss an episode. I will be back next week, but until then, wherever you are and whoever you're with, be kind and happy. Let love rule.